I wanted to kick off with a fantastic piece of journalism that I came across by Kit Singh. We're all aware that the Bowsers are petrol Bowsers are coming to an end, and everybody should be buying electric cars, quite clearly. But apparently, the Straits of Hormuz is open. This is the thing that's supposed to be causing the stop in the flow of oil and petrol because of the Iranian, you know, the American-Israeli war on Iran. But this is what they report. This is what Kit Singh reports. It has been open every day since February the 28th. The IRGC never closed it. What the IRGC did is convert 21 miles of international waterway into a permissioned gate with a toll booth, a vetting process and a guest list. Traffic has collapsed 70 to 80%, but the handful of tankers that transit each day do so with IRGC clearance, paid in yuan or USDT at $2 million to $4 million per vessel. The process is now documented. A tanker operator contacts an IRGC-linked intermediary. The operator submits vessel ownership, flag state, cargo manifest, destination crew list, and AIS transponder data. The IRGC runs background checks, no US-linked ownership, no Israeli cargo, no flagging to aggressor states. If approved, a toll is negotiated. Payment is executed in cash, Chinese yuan or USDT on the Tron network. The IRGC issues VHF radio clearance with specific time window and route through Iranian territorial waters near Larak Island, where IRGC Navy performs visual confirmation. The vessel transits. No physical escort is provided. The protection, in inverted commas, is the removal of the interdiction threat. You are safe because the entity that would attack you has decided not to. China passes, India passes, Pakistan, Turkey, Malaysia, Iraq, Bangladesh pass. Shadow fleet operators aligned with Russia pass. Not all pay the full toll. Some receive exemptions through government-to-government arrangements. Some pay reduced rates. Some pay nothing because the geopolitical alignment is payment enough. The system is not a blockade. It is a membership club with a cover-charged denomination in currencies that are not the US dollar. Now, it's fascinating because this article goes on to how the capitalist system regulates this new system. The insurance industry has done something no government intended. It has formalised IRGC authority over the Strait in actuarially mathematics. A tanker that pays the toll is insurable. A tanker that does not is stranded. Dozens of vessels sit outside the Strait right now, unable to transit because no underwriter will cover them. Lloyd's of London and the international insurance market have withdrawn standard hull and machinery coverage for Hormuz transits. War risk policies now carry premiums of up to 5% of vessel value. That's $5 million for a $100 million tanker per voyage. But the actuary models that price those premiums now incorporate IRGC vetting status as a risk reduction variable. If a vessel can prove it has paid the toll and received VHS clearance, the probability of loss drops from above 20% to below 5%. The same models that price hurricane risks and earthquake exposure are now pricing IRGC compliance as a safety factor. Every toll... anyway, there you go. Capitalism realigns itself.
Yeah, and there's been a bit of an attempt to, I guess, break down that niche club of members that have access to the Strait of Hormuz at the moment. Bahrain this week introduced a resolution to the UN Security Council that would authorise the use of force in the Strait of Hormuz to, quote, keep the Strait open with all necessary means. And this would be essentially military action that would be used to repress, neutralise and deter attempts to obstruct international navigation But the proposal is facing significant resistance, according to three council diplomats who spoke to the Associated Press. The draft placed under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, which authorises measures up to the use of force. And it's worth bearing in mind the way that the UN works. The only resolutions that are actually required to be implemented are those passed at the UN Security Council.
Yeah.
All of the rest of them are just suggestions. But if it's passed at the UN Security Council, states have to take
and
action.
And it can be vetoed by any one of the five.
One of the five veto states. So good segue, actually, Annie. Because so China and Russia, they're both veto-wielding states. They are, as you would imagine, in direct opposition to the text of the draft. France separately has introduced a competing resolution on Monday that would makes no mention, of Iran. This would authorize, rather than authorizing use of force, it would instead urge all parties to de-escalate and return to diplomacy. This is a good segue, I think, to talking about what's going on more broadly in the Israel-US conflict. It doesn't look like negotiation is on the table, that's for sure. It looks de-escalating.
The orange lunatic keeps talking about, yes, we're talking, but the Iranians keep saying, basically, you can't make a deal with the devil, so no, we're not talking.
No,
they've learned their lesson. They've learned their lesson.
So Trump has actually, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's set the scene first about what kind of horrors have been happening in the region this week and what's to come. So we've had continuing airstrikes, obviously, and some of these have included strikes on Tehran, Isfahan and Mashhad, according to the Associated Press. At least 1,937 people have been killed so far.
Oh, my God.
According to Iran's deputy health minister. He also said that 240 of the dead were women, 212 were children, and at least 24,800 people have been injured. Life-changing injuries,
yes,
worth mentioning. There's also been some whispers about what might be coming next strategically for the US in terms of on-the-ground invasion. So Axios reporter Barak Ravid, who is a former IDF intelligence officer, has reported that the Pentagon is developing options for a potential major escalation against Iran that could involve ground troops and an intensified bombing campaign. US officials and other sources suggested that in an attempt to make, quote, a final blow and declare a decisive victory, the Pentagon is considering four options. Firstly, invading or blockading Karg Island, which is Iran's main oil export hub. Secondly, potentially invading Larak, which is an island that helps Iran solidify its control over the Strait of Hormuz. The strategic outposts host Iranian bunkers, attack craft that can blow up cargo ships and radars that monitor movements in the strait. The third option is seizing the strategic island of Abu Musa and two smaller islands which lie near the western entrance to the strait and are controlled by Iran but also claimed by the UAE. And then the final kind of option on the table is blocking or seizing ships that are exporting Iranian oil on the eastern side of the Hormuz Strait. The report from Axios News went on to report that President Trump hasn't made a decision yet, but that a major escalation was likely if negotiations made no progress. And it's, you know, it seems clear that these negotiations are not actually in the process of being undertaken. So there's no real signs of diplomacy underway, despite Trump's insistence that there are. Iranian officials have rejected a 15-point proposal that the US passed through mediators. And Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi stated that, quote, no negotiations have happened with the enemy until now, and we do not plan on any negotiations. Araghchi added that the US tried to send messages to Iran through other nations, but that is not a conversation nor a negotiation.
Fascinating stuff. Obviously, the other things that have been reported is that there's been strikes and damage and obviously probably injury in Jaffa, or which is now called Tel Aviv, and there's a suppression not only in America but in Israel in over reporting what's actually happening. So actually in Trump actually has tried to say that he will try reporters with treason if they don't do the White House line regarding the war, which is a very scary approach towards authoritarianism if we're not already there for the Americans. But another,
he's making it hard enough to report on anyway by changing his mind every two seconds.
Yeah, but the other thing is little tidbits on the overall approach of blanket news is that in America, apparently, they've now increased the age of people that can be accepted into the army to 40. And also they've swept aside any dope convictions. In the past, you weren't allowed to apply to become an army person if you had any, even one conviction of smoking marijuana, which is fascinating considering, considering a whole lot of things. But but the point is that now they've increased the age of people that are acceptable from 35 to 40, which is a bad sign. And I'll tell you something else that was an interesting caveat to that. In England, they've increased the age for people who can be reservists to 65. That's a real dad tummy.
I'm honestly, I don't think this is controversial. I'm not looking forward to, as a young person, the next 60 years of dealing with the fallout of these constant endless wars and climate change. It's looking very bleak. And I am, you know, for context for listeners, I live with a couple of 70-year-olds, so proper boomers. And I was saying to them, like, do you think in your lifetime does this feel like more unrest than you've experienced previously? And they said, yes, this definitely feels chaotic in a way that things have not felt before. And they mentioned part of that might be because of the constant stream of information that we have now because of things like social media and the internet. But it just seems, according to the boomers that are my source, that it is particularly kind of chaotic internationally. And there seems to be, a level of international dysfunction that they don't remember in living memory.
Well, a French politician that gave a speech in their parliament, whatever they call it, deriding the American House as it is, the White House as it is, comparing it to Nero's Rome. And he went through each of the key players in major sections of the government, you know, the heads of justice, and all of them are completely unsuitable for their roles.
Depending on what you're trying to get out of the role.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's that.
They're doing a great job of lining the right pockets.
But that's called chaos in itself. Mm. The tying of personal greed to monumental public outcomes is really, really horrendous. I suppose it's the pinnacle of the crazy individualistic notions that are supposed to have been driving American. America's a big place. I mean, it depends where you stand. I mean, you know, the experience of white people, rich white people, I mean, to be racist about it, rich white people is quite a completely different experience from people who are living, hand to mouth or returned service people who are now homeless.
And I think it's a point that kind of goes without saying, obviously, but it's like a clear illustration of the risks of having really concentrated power, obviously within a country, having a group of elites that have this outsized influence over the goings-on of a country. But beyond that, at an international level, having one country that's got this massive ability to shape the future of the human race as a whole.
Yeah.
And most of the population of the world has no say in who's running that country.
I know. This is the key, isn't it? This is what the battle lines really are. I mean, one of the things that by having a media that concentrates on, well, that's what media does. So journalism is about recording event, right? That's what it's about. And over time, it's become far more gossipy and opinionated. which is not quite the same as reporting. And interestingly enough, in journalism, in the past, they used to employ reporters separate from the writers, the mm-hmm. journalists. So there would be these go-getter guys or who'd go out into the street and collect data. And then it would be written up in florid language and politicised or gone through the political sieve, one assumes, of the paper and then released. But the bare bones of data is a completely different kettle of fish. But even that, an event, once the event's happened, it's over, it's done. But it runs through a list of things that are considered to be important. Who said it? Is it an important person? You know, that's why on 3CR there was this political change. It's not just an important person who's been asked to tell you what their frame of reference is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's going on at the moment is that with this war in Iran, this war by the US and Israelis, what's going on is that, for example, in the West Bank, there's stories of horrendous masks, hundreds of masked Israeli colonists attacking Palestinians in their homes and unseating them from their homes, like dispossessing them from the homes. Like this mawkish, Halloweenish sort of, they've got masks and of course they're backed up by their the IDF. So that's going on at the same time. They're furthering their land grab because they've got an idea about how big Israel really should be, of course.
Mm.
And that intrudes into Egypt. It intrudes into Libya, Egypt and Lebanon and a whole range of, and Jordan. There's a whole range of the people's countries that they believe that they should own. So there'll be there into the endless war. And so this other war is a cover for them increasing their footprint. And at the same time, people are talking about how Trump and many other rich people's misdemeanors in regards to pedophilia are also being sidestepped. And at the moment, what's going on in South America is that the Americans are increasing their warfare on various countries nearby under the guise of attacking warlords, drug cartels. But of course, what's going on in Cuba is just a suppression of an entire country.
Mm. And we've had, I think, two more vessels bombed by the US this week. I think that was on the coast of Cuba. And I didn't end up recording or making a note of this headline, actually, but I think there's been a massive increase in internal kind of collapse in Cuba as a result of the increased pressures. In particular, it seems like the medical system is really struggling right now, and there's been lots of deaths as a result of there being no energy in hospitals. So I think there was I couldn't tell you the stats, but there was an ICU, an entire ICU that ended up passing away because they didn't have access to electricity.
Well, you know, you wonder why Australia thinks it's important to be backing these outrageous behaviours. And as citizens of this country, we probably need to stand up.